All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let us begin. A lot to do today, Mir Tzashem. Today's daf is daf Gimel. And we are picking up, Mir Tzashem, on the last three lines of Beis Amud Beis. At the two dots, we thank this morning's sponsors, our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar, the Lerner Mishpacha, in memory of Mrs. Dina Lerner Gerber, Dina Bas Yehuda Leib, Paul and Kathy Pollack for dedicating the Shiurim this week in memory of Paul's grandparents, Zachariah Ben Zachariah and Dina Bas Pesach, and Mr. and Mrs. Shmuel Artman and Mr. and Mrs. Moshe David Artman for dedicating the Shiurim this week, Lezecha Nishmas, their father's 20th yard site, Fishel Beryl Ben Yitzchak Gershon. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamos will have an Aliyah and the family's Enacham. By the Levitan family, creation of the yard site, the Peshi Bas Yisrael, mother of Eileen Goldberg. We hope that in the merits of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah and a family in the Chama. Thank you. All right, so with that, let us begin. So we continue today, really incredible Gemara. So we're picking up again three lines from the bottom, Beis Amud Beis. Amud Rab Masna La Abaye. So Masna said to Abaye, Tamni Havyon. So we'll remember again, in our Mishnah, the way the Mishnah was set up was Yitzios Hashta B'Shtayim Shein Arba B'Fnim U'Shtayim Shein Arba B'Chutz. The Mishnah listed a total of eight cases. Four cases from the perspective of the individual bifnim, meaning standing inside of the Roshos HaYachid, and four cases from the perspective, ultimately again, of the individual standing bachutz, in Roshos HaRabim. So what we saw in the Mishnah is two of those cases were Chayiv Midaraisa. Two of those cases, ultimately, again, were midrabanan. So now the Gemara says, is that true that there are only eight cases? So the Gemara says, Tarti Sari Havyon. In reality, there are, in fact, 12 cases. 12 cases. So the Gemara says, well, 12 cases, will the Tameich, Shisar Havyon. In reality, ultimately, again, there should be 16 cases. Now, we'll say, now look at Rashi for just a moment. Tarti Sari Havyon, Arboich Yubi. See, we're not going to get too much into the technical details over here. Well, we are going to get into the technical details over here. And I'll say, but what the Gemara is saying is like this, is that many of the cases, there are a number of cases where technically speaking, what you have is, let's go back for just a moment. Remember again, if there was one takeaway from yesterday's daf, well, there's one thing from yesterday's daf is that Shabbos is not brachas. That's number one, right? Because the second thing from yesterday's daf is that in order to violate transferring an object from one domain to another, you require what? Both an akira and a hanocha. The same individual must uproot the object from one rishus and place it down to rest in a second rishus. So we'll say, interestingly enough, Every case where halacha lemaisa, one individual does the akira and the second person does the hanacha, the Mishnah treated that like one case. But technically speaking, what you can do is you could treat that like two cases, right? Because for example, if the balabais does the akira and the ani does the hanacha, the Mishnah treats that as one case. So then, but ultimately, you could treat it as two cases. But say if you treat each of those cases like two cases, then what? You actually come up with a total of 16 cases when you go through all the different variations, which makes sense. Because if you have eight now, and you go into the cases ultimately again where only one did the akira, one did the hanacha, you come up with a total of 16 cases. To which the Gemara says, Amalei, halokasha. The truth is, the idea that it's not, I'm sorry, let me take that back. You come up with 12 cases. If you go ahead and you count all, if you count the cases where one does an akira, one does a hanacha, then ultimately again that gives you four more cases. If you then go on to include all of the cases of Ptur, But remember again, there's another subset of cases in the Mishnah where you have two individuals doing the malacha together, where halacha lemaisa again, we say potter. If you put all of those cases together, and again, include both of those cases as two, then ultimately you come out with a total of 16 cases. Amrle, halo kasha. So the Gemara says this is not a problem. I'll tell you why. Bishlama tap of gimel, bishlama bava dereisha potter umutter lo katani. So we'll say, so the truth is, the cases in the Reisha, which would be what we call potter umutter, that ultimately, again, are exempt and permitted, are ultimately, again, not included in the tally of cases. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi, Gimel Amud Aleph, Bava Dereisha, Ha'ani Chayiv U'Balabayis Potter, U'Balabayis Chayiv Ha'ani Potter, the Potter Mechatos, U'Mutter Lechatchila. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the Gemara says, in the first part of the Mishnah, where one of the parties is Chayiv and one of the parties is Potter, the Mishnah, we're not including those cases. We're not including the Potter party in the tally of cases. Because we are assuming over here that what does Potter mean? We're going to challenge this assumption in just a moment. But we're assuming that Potter means Potter u Mutter. That ultimately, again, a person is exempt from liability and their act is actually permitted. Ela Bava de Seifa. But when it comes to the second part of the Mishnah, the Potter Aval Aser, where ultimately, again, when we say Potter, Potter means you are exempt from liability, but it is still Aser, Kasha. The Gemara says, again, that is a question as to why we would not include those cases in the tally, to which the Gemara says, Mi'ika Bikuli Shabbos Potter Umutter. So I'll say, the Gemara has an interesting question. Is there any situation in Hilchos Shabbos where we have a case of Potter Umutter? This goes back to something we learned in yesterday's daf. I mentioned this in passing in the Mishnah. I kind of gave it away a little bit. That I both say, what does it mean when in Shabbos you see the word Potter? What does Potter mean? So the Gemara just made the assumption that in the first part of the Mishnah, when you saw Potter, Potter means mutter. So we'll say, remember again, going back to the beginning of the Mishnah, the first cases in the Mishnah is where you had one person doing the Akira, one person doing the Hanacha. Right? That was the first case. First set of cases in the Mishnah. So therefore, again, the Ani, for example, is going ahead and taking the basket, you know, from the Rishus HaYochid and transferring it, placing it down to rest in, or Rishus HaRabim, placing it down to rest in the Rishus HaYochid. So in that case, the Ani is Chayiv, the Balabayis is Potter. The Gemara is making the assumption that Potter means Potter u Mutter. To which the Gemara says, in Hilchos Shabbos, when we find the concept of Potter, does Potter ever mean Potter umutter? We assume that what? We assume Bar Shmuel, Kol Peturei Shabbos, Potter Aval Aser. This is very interesting. In general, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so we'll say, whenever you see the word Potter, Potter means Potter Aval Aser, which means what? You are exempt from liability, but what? You are not permitted to engage in this act rabbinically. That's the guiding light. However, with three exceptions, Bar Mehani Tlas, I will say, interestingly enough, there are three exceptions to this rule. In other words, in all of Hilchos Shabbos, what the Gemara suggests, and then, remember, we're going to challenge all of these concepts, but in all of Hilchos Shabbos, Potter always means Potter Aval Aser, except for three cases where Potter means Potter Umutter. What are the three cases? It's actually fascinating. So they are. We'll say now, the truth is, we're going to see these cases in greater depth in a number of weeks, but let's go through it now a little bit. What are the three cases? Seidas Tzvi, the trapping of a deer. We'll say we are going to see one of the Lamates Malachos, one of the 39 Malachos is Tzayid, Seida, trapping. You're not allowed to trap an animal on Shabbos. You see yourself, phew. All right, at least that's one thing I don't have to struggle with, Baruch Hashem. Right? So we'll say, so it's not so pashy, because remember, again, trapping a bee, right? Trapping a fly. So these kind of things also potentially border on Seida. Again, we'll see the technicalities of it. But there's an interesting exception. Let's see, I both say there is a deer in a room. And let's say Reuven goes ahead and sits by the entranceway of that room. Now, we'll say by Reuven sitting by the entranceway of that room, what happens? So Reuven has effectively trapped the deer. So Reuven has engaged in an act of tzayit, in an act of trapping. Let's say Shimon then goes ahead and subsequently sits down next to Reuven. So we'll say, so the halacha is Shimon is Potter Umutter. Why? Because Shimon, thank you. Shimon has not effectively done anything. Right? Shimon has not contributed anything. Shimon has not added anything. I will say not only that, but even if Reuven were to get up and Shimon were to be the only one there, Shimon would still be pater umutter. So we'll say, so that's an example where again, Shimon's act did not contribute anything. Shimon did not add anything, so he's pater umutter. Another example, say das nachash, trapping a snake. I will say, now interestingly enough, trapping a snake, the Gemara posits, is pater umutter. Why? So we'll say this is going to get into a fascinating discussion, which we'll spend a significant amount of time on, of what's called a malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. What happens when you do a malacha, but not for the intended purpose of the malacha? For example, I trap a snake. Now we'll say, why am I trapping a snake? Presumably, danger. Danger. I'm trying to avert danger. Now, I remember, interestingly enough, so I'm trapping. Trapping is a malacha, right? Trapping is a malacha. Trapping is a prohibited activity. But as we're going to see, malachas are only usur when done for their intended purpose. So what's the intended purpose of trapping? Why do you trap something normally? Because you want it. You want to eat it, you want to kill it, whatever you want to do. But the goal is to trap. It's not, once I'm trapping to go ahead and save myself from danger, that's called a malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. I'm doing a malacha, but I'm not doing a malacha for the intended purpose. I'm doing it for a secondary purpose. So we're going to see that what the status of such a malacha like that is subject to dispute. So in this kind of case over here, where I'm trapping the snake in order to go ahead and save myself from danger, that's going to be pater umutter. And a third case, mafis mursa, where one goes ahead and literally opens up a boil. So as we're going to see again, and all these things are fascinating. We're going to spend so much time on all of these concepts. But opening a boil, the issue, interestingly enough, what's the issue of opening a boil on Shabbos? So we're going to see there are two potential issues. One you would have thought would have been shechita. I will say, now hear me out on this. I will say, why would this be shechita? No. So anytime you go ahead and you extract blood, so that could be shechita. As we're going to see, that's actually not the issue of the boil, because when it comes to the boil, so the assumption is that the blood is already separated from the body. It's outside the body. Shechita is only problematic when you're taking blood that's absorbed in the body. The interesting issue that potentially comes up with the boil is actually bona, is building. The idea being that what people used to do was to go ahead and create an opening for the boil to allow the boil to drain. That creation of an opening might actually be a form of building, binyan, bona. But interestingly enough, because my intention is not to build, what's my intention? My intention is to allow the boil to drain. That's the goal. Another example of a malacha she'ina tzricha legufa. Another example, ultimately, of a malacha not done for its intended purpose. So again, back to our Gemara now. So the Gemara says that in general in Shabbos, when we say pater always means what? Pater aval aser. Right? It's exempt, but you're still not allowed to do it, meaning it's still biblically prohibited, except for three cases where pater means pater umutter. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, ki itzrich lei l'shmuel, pituri deka avid maisa. Pituri delo avid maisa ikatuba. So we'll say ultimately again what Shmuel meant was as follows. Remember, Shmuel made the statement that in general, in all of Hilchos Shabbos, so we'll say, just so we keep our eye on the ball over here, the Mishnah told us, how many cases do we have? How many cases? Mishnah. Eight. Eight cases, right? Eight cases. Four bifnim, four bachutz. All the Gemara is saying is eight cases. The truth is, you have a lot more than eight cases. You maybe have 12 cases, maybe even have up to 16 cases, to which the Gemara says, you're right. We're not including cases that are pater umutter. To which the Gemara says, pater umutter, right? Where do you ever have cases that are pater umutter? In all of Hilchos Shabbos, except for three cases, every case of pater always means what? Pater? Aval aser. To which the Gemara says, no. When Shmuel says that there are only three cases of pater umutter, that meant what? Dika'avid maisa. Right? It's case directly, Shmuel, pature dika'avid maisa. Pature de loka'avid maisa, ikatuva. What Shmuel went is as follows. There are only three cases where when you are actively performing an act, that it'll be pater aval mutter. right? Because for example, in these three cases of trapping the deer, trapping the snake, lance, right, opening up the boil, lancing the boil, these are cases of dynamic activity. So Shmuel says there are only three cases where you're doing something active where it's going to be pater or mutter. But there are plenty of cases where a person is passive that are pater umutter. So I will say, for example, in our Mishnah, in the opening part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah describes that one of the parties is chayiv, one of the parties is pater, the pater party is passive, right? Jabose, remember again, those are the cases, just to illustrate this, of the ani going ahead and, let's say, taking the basket from the Roshus HaYachid and placing it down to rest in the hand, from the Roshus HaRabin and placing it down to rest in the hand of the Balabais and the Roshus HaYachid. In that case, the ani is chayiv and the Balabais is pater. It could very well be that pater in that case means what? Pater avamutter. Aye, there are only three cases of pater avamutter. No, there are only three cases of dynamic activity that are pater avamutter. But there are plenty of cases of passivity that are pater umutter as well. And in that case, where the ani, for example, places the basket in the hands of the balabais, what's the balabais' role? What's his role? Nothing. He's passive. So it could in fact mean pater avamutter. Miko makom. Tarti Sarihavion. So fine. So I'll say, so now I understand ultimately again why there aren't 16 cases in the Mishnah. Right? Because at the end of the day, we're not going to count cases that are pater umutter. Fine. But there are still 12 cases. So why does it make it sound there's only 8 cases? To which the Gemara says, Mikol Makom Tarti Sarihavion. Peturi Da'asi Behula Lide Chiyuv Chatos Kachoshiv. Because Rabbi said, we only reckon cases of Ptur that ultimately, again, could potentially come to a situation of a Chiyuv Chatos. It's very interesting. So we're only reckoning cases where potentially you could come to a situation of liability. But a case that could never really result in a situation of liability, we're not counting towards the final tally of cases. So Rabbi said, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Peturi de asibula de chiyev chatos kegon akiros shein tchilas hamalacha de ikol migzar dilma gamer lo aval hanochos lo matzi lemesi lidi chiyev chatos de haleka akira gabihai va'arba dikani b'chatos." So let's listen to this. This is fascinating. In a tally of cases, we're only talking about situations that could potentially result in liability. But any situation that cannot result in liability is not included in the tally. What does that mean? So the Gemara says something fascinating. The Gemara says the only potential situation that could result in liability is where someone performs the akira. But hear this out for just a moment, right? If I go ahead and perform the akira, remember what's akira? What's akira? Akira means lifting the object up from its place of rest in domain number one. That act can result in liability. Why? When is liability generated in that case? When I go ahead and put it down to rest. But I will say, interestingly enough, if I don't do the Akira, right, if someone else did the Akira, and all I'm going to do is what? The Hanacha, that act cannot result in liability. Because without an Akira, the Hanacha, by definition, is meaningless. So the only cases that we're counting in the tally of the Mishnah are cases which could potentially result in liability, meaning only cases of Akira, not cases of Hanacha. Good. So the Gemara says, "Lo asibul dechayiv chiyuv chatas lo chashiv." Good. So the Gemara says, "Rabbi says." So therefore, again, that's how we remain at 8. So therefore, again, it's a much, even though technically speaking, if you wanted to actually be, you know, intellectually honest and say how many actual potential variations of cases are there in the Mishnah, you would have to say what? You'd have to say 16. But then essentially what we're doing is, no, we're not including every single potential variation. We're being a bit more specific. First of all, again, we're not including cases that are patal avamutter, right? We're not including cases that are permitted. And there are cases which are permitted because cases of passivity, by definition, will be mutter. And furthermore, we're only including cases where halacha lemaisa where halacha lemaisa, there could be a potential liability, i.e. cases where which began with an akira, but cases in which there's no potential liability, halacha lemaisa not included in the tally. Good, Victor. Shabbos said, this is incredible. Ushnein peturin, Shabbos, remember again, we had the example, the last part of the Mishnah, is where the ani and the balabayis go ahead and perform the malacha together. For example, the case was, Pashata ani esedo lifnim, v'natal balabayis misocha. Right? The ani goes ahead and extends his hand. So remember again, the ani is standing where? Just to review, ani is standing where? Rosh Hashanah. He's extending his basket inside to the Rosh Hashanah, to the balabayis, and the balabayis takes the basket out of his hand. So we'll say, what's happened over here? What's happened in that case? The ani did the akira. The balabayis did the hanacha. So Rabbi says, therefore, neither one did a complete malacha. And therefore, the Mishnah says, Shnei and Peturin. They're both exempt. Because neither, remember again, there's only liability if one performs a complete malacha. But in this case, the ani did part, the balabayis did part. So watch this. The Gemara says, I don't understand this concept of Shnei and Peturin. Vaha is avida malacha mebinayu. But I don't understand. People say, how could they both be liable? How could they both be liable? Meaning, together, they produced a malacha. Together, they produced a malacha. So how could it be that halacha lemaisa? How could it be that halacha lemaisa? They're going to be exempt? And I was supposed to say, see what the Gemara is struggling with over here? On one hand, I understand that no one could be fully liable because no one did the full malacha. But at the end of the day, a malacha resulted from their joint actions. So how can there be no liability? Now what the Gemara doesn't tell me is what? So who do you want to assign liability to? Right? Who do you want to make liable? So okay, so it tells us, discusses this idea, but the point the Gemara is struggling with is, you can't, is it time for, I think, what time is the fast start? 17? Why can't I get that level of passion for Gemara, right? It's amazing, amazing. 6:07.
54 seconds.
Good. Okay. Good. So says the Gemara, so why is it that halacha lemaisa? They're going to be pturin. After all, their combined activity produced a result to which the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Omer, we'll say this perhaps is one of the most important, well, not one of the most important, but an incredibly important yisod. Listen to this. Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Me'am ha'aretz ba'asosa. So we'll say, so the pasuk over here says as follows, the pasuk in its entirety, V'nefesh achos techata bishgaga me'am ha'aretz ba'asosa, achos mimitzos Hashem asher lo te'asena va'ashem. Torah here is talking about liability if one transgresses. So we'll say, so the way the Torah phrases liability is, me'am ha'aretz, if someone from the nation, a Jew, ba'asosa, performs a malacha. So how is liability phrased? Liability is phrased in the singular. In the singular. When is there liability? Ha'ose es kula, v'la'ose es miktsasa. It is only one who performs the malacha in its entirety and not one who performs a partial malacha. So we'll say, the Gemara is dashing this from the singularity of the verse. Me'am ha'aretz ba'asosa. It is only when one person performs the malacha. In other words, there is only liability that is created when one person performs the act in its entirety. Yachid va'asa osa chayiv. Therefore, if one person performs a malacha, ultimately, again, there is chiyuv shnayim va'asu osa. If two people perform a malacha together, peturin. Ultimately, again, there is petur. So we'll say, this is based on the drasha of the pasuk. If one person performs the entire malacha from beginning to end, there is in fact liability. But if two people do it jointly, there is no liability. So I'll say the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, we support this idea. Amar B'chi Bar Gamda, Nizr Kamipiya Chabura. There was a ruling, literally again, we'll say it literally means that was thrown from the mouth of the Chabura. So that lashon of thrown from the mouth, from the Chabura, means it was unanimous. Va'amru ba'asosa yochid sha'asa chayiv shtayim sha'asua peturin. If one individual does the malach himself, then ultimately, again, there is chiyuv. If two do it together, they are pater. The Bosse, there's an incredible mussar in this also, which is, if you think about it, what the Gemara is saying over here is that the definition of malacha, the definition of dynamic activity, is something that ultimately, again, results from one person's exclusive activity. If more than one person does it, it's not called a malacha. The Bosse is an incredible yisod in life. If you want to produce results in life, dynamic results in life, you must take the complete responsibility to execute from beginning to end. If you rely on other people to accomplish your life objectives, if you rely on other people to make your malachas happen, chances are the results are not the same. If you want dynamic activity, you want malacha in life, ba'asosa. Me'am aretz ba'asosa. Take the achrayis from beginning to end. And then in Mirat Hashem, what you want will indeed happen. Incredible Musar. Says the Gemara. Boy, my name, Rav, Rabbi, very exciting case. Very exciting case. Rabbi, you know what's exciting in life? You know what's exciting in life? Whatever you decide is exciting in life. Is exciting in life. This is exciting. Boy, my name, Rabbi. Hetinu chavero. Ochlin umashkin vautzian lochaz. Listen to this fascinating case. So I'll say, imagine the following scene. Look at Rashi just a moment. Titino v'chavero, shei gufo b'rishos hayachid, v'tino chavero di'ihu gufelo akrimidis. We'll say, watch this. So imagine the following situation. Reuven is sitting in the rishos hayachid. So he's sitting down. Shimon goes ahead and literally puts on his back, you know, a bag filled with food. And we'll say, the truth is, it doesn't matter what the bag is filled with. Again, they're just using food as the example over here. So Rashi points out over here. We'll say, so Reuven's sitting in the Rosh Hashayachid. Shimon puts on his back a bag filled with food. And then what happens? Reuven gets up and walks out from the Rosh Hashayachid to the Rosh Harabim. So we'll say, so what's the Shaila? Mahu, what happened over here? Do we say Akiras Gufo ka Akiras Chefetz Mim Komodami Umechayev? So I'll say, so what's unique about this case? What's unique about this case is Reuven himself never actively lifted up the object and transferred it from one domain to another. But what happened? The objects were placed on his body when his body was in a state of rest in one domain. And then he got up and went and transferred out and walked out to another domain. So do we say that ultimately, again, when he lifts his body up, so the lifting of his body up is just the equivalent as if he lift up the food with his hands and took it out from one domain to another, or not? Oh, Dilma, lo, or perhaps not. Look at Rashi. Akiras Gufo, Sha'akaras Raglov Minabayis La'akar Shinitan. So do we say that when Reuven gets up and he lifts his body, that's the equivalent had Reuven gone ahead and lifted up the food items with his hands? Or do we say no? They will say that this doesn't satisfy the criteria of Hotzah. Hotzah means when you lift an object up with your hands and you take it out, somebody else put this on his body. The fact that he then subsequently got up is not an act of Hotzah. Oh, Domalo, Amalei Chayiv. So he said to Rabbi, remember again, this is Rav asking the Shaila from Rabbi. Rabbi said, he's Chayiv. Reuven is Chayiv in this case for an act of transferring an item from domain to domain. Ve'ina dome liado. And Rabbi said, this is not comparable to the case of his hand. Now, Rabbi said, what does it mean the case of his hand? Now look at Rashi just now. Ve'ina dome liado. Hapshuta lifnim. Ve'gufo lochutz. Ve'nosan balabayis lesocha de paterbe. Rabbi said, now watch this. This is fascinating. You remember this case in the Mishnah? The Ani is standing in the Rosh Hasharabim. The Balabayis is standing in the Rosh Hasayachid. The Ani extends his hand into the Rosh Hasayachid. The Balabayis places something into his hand, and the Ani brings it out. The Ani brings it out. What's the halacha, Rabbi Hussein? What's the halacha? The truth is, the Ani is potter. Why is the Ani potter? Because he did not do the akira. He did not do the act of lifting up the object, ultimately, again, from one domain, taking it out to the other. So Rebbe says like this, I might have thought that this case of where Reuven is sitting in the Rishus HaYachid. Somebody puts the package of food on his back. He then gets up. Is that not like the case of the Ani? Is it not like the case of the Balabayas placing the food in the hands of the Ani? To which Rebbe says, no. This is different than the case of the Yad. In this case, where Reuven gets the stuff put on his back and then gets up and goes, he's chayiv, even though in the case of the Yad, you're potter. Why? So the Gemara says, my taima, gufal naich, yado lo naich. Very profound. Why? Because the body is considered to be at rest. The body is considered to be at rest. So I'll say when the body ultimately, again, so when the person, when Reuven is sitting, or Reuven is stationary, Reuven is considered to be at rest, and therefore when he subsequently gets up, ultimately, again, that is an akira. The hand, on the other hand, right, when the Ani has his hand extended into the Rishus HaYachid, that hand is not considered to be at rest. Therefore, when the Balabayis goes in and places the object into the hand and the Ani takes it out, that is not a case of Akira. That is not a case, ultimately, again, of uprooting something. So Amar Lei, so we'll say, this is great. Amar Lei Rab Chiel Rav. So we'll say, remember again, so this exchange between Rebbe and Rav is happening in the Beis Medrash. Rab Chiel sees what's going on and he says, Bar Pachsi, literally, again, son of nobleman. So he was speaking simply to Rav. Lao amin alecha. Haven't I told you many times? Ki koi Rabbi b'hai mesechta, lo seshayle b'mesechta achrisi. When Rabbi's studying one mesechta, please do not ask him questions in another mesechta. Right? In other words, so what Rabbi Chiya was saying to Rav is, Rabbi's not currently studying Shabbos. He's not holding in Shabbos right now. And haven't I told you so many times? Please, when Rabbi's studying subject A, don't ask him questions in subject B. Why not? Because maybe he's just not holding. Or we'll say, remember again, this happens to be a fascinating discussion because in general, the Gemara says elsewhere that the mark of a Talmud Chacham is one who is able to answer a question in any particular area. But nevertheless, we'll say there's the concept that in the Beis Medrash, we focus on the topic at hand. So how many times have I not told you, right? If Rebbe's not holding in a particular area, don't ask him shilas there. De'i lav de Rebbe gavra rabahu. For were it not that Rebbe's a very great man, kasafte. Ultimately, again, you could have embarrassed him. De mishani lecha shinuye de lav shinuyahu. Because you would have embarrassed him, because perhaps you would have asked Rabbi a question, and maybe he's not holding in the particular subject, and maybe he would not have given you a good answer. However, again, you're in luck, because hashta mia shapir mishani lecha. It happens to be over here this time, even though you asked Rabbi a shayla in a topic which he is not holding in, he happened to give you a good answer. He gave you a good answer. So I'll say, Sir Rabbi was Sir Rabbi Chiya. It's very beautiful, actually. Rabbi Chiya was very careful with the kavod of Rabbi. And he was just telling Rav, Rebbe's got a lot on his mind. He's holding on the sugi that the yeshiva is learning. The yeshiva is currently not learning Shabbos. So don't, I don't know, whatever they were learning, don't ask him shilas on Shabbos when we're not holding on Shabbos. But good news is, all right, you asked him anyway, and good news is Rebbe gave you the correct answer. So the Gemara says, let's analyze. So nevertheless, Rebbe even right, v'hashtem yes shabbos v'shanilcha, desanya, because they all say we learned. Hayaton also was a member again. So just so you keep in mind the exchange. So really this is based on the Mishnah. In the Mishnah's case, I know that when the Ani is standing in the Rishus HaRabim and he extends his hand into the Rishus HaYachid and the Balabayis puts something in the Ani's hand and the Ani subsequently withdraws his hand, neither is Chayiv. Neither is Chayiv, right? Because the act of the Ani withdrawing his hand is not considered to be an act of an Akira. So now, based on that, Reb Chiya asked Rebbe if Reuven, if Shimon loads food onto Reuven's back while Reuven is in a state of rest in the Rosh HaYachid, and Reuven then goes ahead and gets up and walks into Rosh HaRabim, so ultimately, again, has Reuven transgressed? To which Rebbe says, yes. Rebbe says, yes. Why? Because the body is considered to be at rest, right? It was a 50-50. Because the body is considered to be at rest, and when you get up and you go out, that is called an Akira. What Rebbe is doing is distinguishing between the body and the hand. An outstretched hand is not considered to be, quote-unquote, at rest. But a body, right, a body in a rishus is considered to be at rest. So when you put something on the body in one rishus, and then the person subsequently gets up and goes out to a different rishus, that is called an akira. But putting something in a hand in one rishus and withdrawing that hand into a different rishus is not called an akira. So says the Gemara. So let's analyze the sanya hayataun ochlin humashkin mi ba'od yom. So it's an interesting case. If a person was carrying around, we'll say now ta'un usually means something that you're carrying on your back. So if a person was carrying food and drink, this is Erev Shabbos. So it's been, right, it's been on my back since Erev Shabbos. V'otzion l'chutz mishech ha'sheicha. So it's put on my back, ultimately again on Erev Shabbos. And I take it out from one domain to another domain. One Shabbos starts, chayiv. Ultimately, again, I will be chayv. I will say, Narashi points out over here that it must be that what? It must be that halacha. Excuse me, Tosis points out. I'm sorry. Top Tosis on Gimel Amud Beis, Kisha Omid Lafush. Just a technical issue in this case. If the food was put on my back, ultimately, again, before Shabbos, it must be that I stopped in the Rosh Hashayachid sometime before Shabbos started. Because ultimately, again, if I didn't stop and I was constant movement, that wouldn't be an act of Otsab. We're not going to get into the technicalities of that. The point over here is that you see from this price of that what? That stuff that is put on my back, ultimately, and then I get up, has the status of an Akira. So the Rabbi will say, Halacha l'maisa, if Shimon puts food on Reuven's back, and then Reuven subsequently gets up, so even though Reuven has not in himself done an active act of lifting, when Reuven stands up and walks out to a different rishus, so Reuven is considered as if he did the Akira, and then the subsequent Hanocha. Beautiful. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, Rabbi says, so kind of like segueing into the next sugya, so Amar Abaye, pshitali, yado shel adam eino lo kirshus harabim velo kirshus hayochid. Shabbos says, so now here's what's interesting. We had a lot of cases in the Mishnah where a person's body was in one domain and his hand was in another domain. So Shabbos says, so now interestingly enough, what happens when your body is in one rishus and your hand is in a different rishus? So what's the status of your hand vis-a-vis your body? So Abaye says, it's clear to me that what? That one's hand is not like Rosh Hasharabim and not like Rosh Hashayachid. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Amar Abaye Pshitali, Mimas Nisin Diyodo Shadam Hapshutol Rosh Hasharas, Eino Nizrekes Achar Gufo Legamre, Liyos Kirushus Shu Omeid Ba, Bein Shu Rosh Hashayachid, Bein Shu Rosh Hasharabim." So what Abaye says like this: it is clear to me that when a person is standing in one domain, right, and his hand is extended into a second domain, that it's not immediate that his hand is treated like the domain in which the rest of his body is standing. So, you hear this? So, Abaye says, right, again, this is all the keys of the Mishnah. So, when my body is in one domain and my hand is extended into another domain, it's not pashut, it's not simple that my hand automatically follows the domain designation of the rest of my body. Where do I know this from? Watch this. So, the Gemara says, Kirshus Arabim lo damyo, miyodo da'ani. So I'll say, so I know, for example, that my hand, even if I'm standing in the public domain, and my hand is extended into the private domain, that my hand is not automatically afforded the status of the public domain. How do I know that? From the case of the ani. Look at Rashi. Kirshus Arabim lo damyo miyado da'ani. Tiktani maslisin dechinata balavayis misocha apater. I will say, for example, again, in the case of where the ani takes the basket, and he extends the basket from Rishusram to Rishus Hayachid. And then what happens? What happens if the balabayis takes the basket out of the ani's hand? What's the halacha? The balabayis is pater. Now, what does that tell you? What that tells you is that the hand of the ani is not like the Rosh Hasharabim. How do I know that? Because if the hand of the ani was like the Rosh Hasharabim, then what? Then what? Then the balabayis should be chayiv. Because then he's effectively taking an object from Rosh Hasharabim to Rosh Hasayachid. So the Gemara says, Gershos Hayachid lo damyo miyodo de balabayis. And I both say, same idea, that when the balabayis extends the loaf of bread from the Rosh Hashayachid to the Rosh Hasharabim, and the ani subsequently takes it, that's what? That Allah said, the ani is not chayiv. So what does that tell you? That the hand of the balabayis is not like the Rosh Hashayachid. Therefore, Abbas say, Allah Lamais, what you begin to see is that your hand, interestingly enough, could be afforded a different status than the rest of your body. That even if your body is standing in one domain, your hand doesn't necessarily follow the status of where your body is. So the Gemara says, "Boy, Abaye." Abaye says, "Okay." So, "Mahu Abaye by Yadosha Adamau Shete Asek Karmelis." So, we'll say, it's an interesting follow-up on this. So can the hand of the individual become like a karmelis? So again, the karmelis, a karmelis as we're going to see, is an area that resembles a rishus harabim in certain respects, but in other respects does not satisfy the criteria. But what we haven't gotten into is as follows, which we won't get into for a little while, is what's the definition of these different domains? Meaning, what makes a rishus hayachid, rishus hayachim, rishus harabim, rishus harabim? We haven't seen that yet. But I will say, but suffice to say for our purposes right now, a karmelis is an area that has qualities like a rishus harabim, but yet doesn't satisfy all the criteria of rishus harabim. So maybe a person's hand is like a karmelis. Mi kansua rabban ala dure de gabe. Oh, no. So I will say, interestingly enough, here's the shayla. The shayla is, I will say, what happens if halacha lamaisa, somebody extends their hand, right, into a different domain with an object? So are they permitted to withdraw it back or not? So the Gemara says, let's analyze. Tashma, haisig yadom alei haperos velsia lachutz. So I'll say, watch this case. Let's say my hand was filled with fruit and I extended it outside, right? So let's say again, I'm holding fruit in my house, in Rosh Hashayachid, and I extend my hand into the Rosh Hashayachid. Now, both and I understand, in that case, so I have not yet done a hanacha in the Rosh Hashanah. The shayla is, can I pull my hand back into my home or not? So, tani chada asu lachzira, v'tani idach mutu lachzira. So, I'll say, one opinion said, or I should say, one brisa said, it's asher to pull your hand back. Another brisa said that it's mutter. So, which the Gemara said, my love, baka miflagi. So, what are they arguing about? Demar savar ke karmelis tamya. So, I'll say, because maybe one opinion holds, that your hand almost takes on the identity of a different rishos, right? Your hand is not rishos hayachid, your hand is not rishos harabim, your hand is like a karmelis. So we'll say, here's the problem with your hand being a karmelis, which is that once you take that fruit and you extend it from your hand into the rishos harabim, then what? To pull your hand back is effectively what? Transferring objects from one domain to another. So we'll say, lo, the holy amulke karmelis damyo. In reality, again, everyone will agree that the hand is almost given its own distinct status of a karmelis. Follow kasha, and there's no contradiction between the braises. Kan lamata me'asara, kan lamala me'asara. The both say this is fascinating. The public domain, as we're going to see, has specific airspace restrictions. Public domain only goes up until 10 tfachim. 10 tfachim. Above 10 tfachim is no longer Rosh Hasharabim. Now, what that is, we're going to have to see. So as possible as follows. When the Brisa says that you can't extend your hand back, if you extend it into Rosh Hasharabim, is when? When you extended it within 10 tfachim. So therefore, your hand went into Rosh Hasharabim, you can't extend it back anymore because the hand is like a karmelis. Therefore, pulling it back in is like transferring an item between domains. When it said you could withdraw your hand is when? When you inserted your hand into the Rosh Hasharabim above 10 tfachim. If it's above 10 tfachim, then halacha lemaisa, ultimately what? You're extending it into a makom ptur. The other possibility is both cases are where you are extending your hand within 10 tfachim, v'lav ki karmelis damyo, and ultimately again the hand is not like a karmelis. V'lo kasha, so we'll say it's not a contradiction. But kami ba'od yom, kami shecha shecha. Watch this, so we'll say everything depends on when you extended your hand into the rishos harabim. So we'll say when ultimately again you extended your hand. When you extended your hand during the day before it was Shabbos, the rabbis allowed you to pull your hand back. But when you extended your hand on Shabbos, the rabbis did not allow you to pull your hand back. So the Gemara said, "Mishecha shecha mi ba'od yom lo kansua rabbanon." Mishecha shecha kansua rabbanon. If you extended your hand ultimately again while it was still day before Shabbos, Chazal allowed you to pull it back. But if you extended your hand on Shabbos, Chazal did not allow you to go ahead and pull it back. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Adrabba, Ipcha Mistaba. The Rebbe said it should really be just the opposite. Mi ba'od yom di shadi leilo asi ledechi evchatos liknesu rabbanon. The Rebbe said ultimately, again, it should be just the opposite. If you extended your hand from your home, from Shusecha to Shusar Abin, right, and you didn't pull it back before Shabbos, Chazal should let you pull it back. Why? Ultimately, again, because ultimately, I will say, what's the worst case scenario? If you were to drop the object there in Rishus HaRabim, would you be in violation of anything? And the answer is no. Why? Because I will say that's a case of where the Akira was done before Shabbos, because remember, you extend the object before Shabbos, it'll only be the Anacha. So I will say, however, again, Mishech HaShecha, the Shadi Le Asi Wuladechi Evchatos, Lo Niklus Rabbanas. Well, so we'll have to stop with this, but what I want to share with you is something amazing over here, which we'll get into in tomorrow's daf, which is as follows. Let's say, if you extend your hand out before Shabbos starts, right, the worst case scenario is, if you drop that object, there's no real chiyuv. Why? Because in that case, the Akira was done before Shabbos, and the Hanach will be done after Shabbos. So we'll say, that would be, so therefore it makes sense, that would be a good case for the Rabbanan to knas you. But however, in the case of where you extended your hand on Shabbos itself, we want you to be able to withdraw your hand. Why? Because withdrawing your hand, that must also be an Isur Dirabanan. If you were to drop that object on Shabbos, what would happen? That would be mamish, a bona fide act of Hotzah. And yet we see that the rabbis are still going to kenas you. So we'll stop over here. We're going to pick up Emir Tashem with this case tomorrow. I'll say just a reminder. So tomorrow, once again, Purim, Shatom V'tlachas, we begin at 5:45. No Masilas Yisharim. We'll begin. We'll resume Masilas Hashem, Meretz Hashem, on Purim itself. Oh, excuse me, on Shushan Purim. Shacham, one second.
Extend into the other.